everybody. My name is Shauna, and this is the American English Podcast. My goal here is to teach you the English spoken in the United States through common expressions, pronunciation tips, and interesting cultural snippets or stories. I hope to keep this fun, useful, and interesting. Let's do it. Hi, everyone. How are you? Long time no talk. I hope that you're doing well wherever you're at in the world. Today, we're going to do another Chats with Shauna episode, and we're going to talk about my language company that flopped. In this conversation, you'll hear all about the idea that got me and two of my friends to travel around the world and try and start a company. You'll also hear about starting a business in New York City. You'll hear about becoming a digital nomad and some lessons I learned about starting a business in general. If you are planning on starting a company in the United States ever, or simply are interested in the vocabulary and phrases used to describe this journey, stay tuned. At the end, I'll also share a bunch of interesting and great resources available today for you to find native English speakers near you. I'd like to begin by saying thank you to all of the dedicated listeners out there who have sent me such nice messages since I started this podcast. Your messages on Instagram and email have made my day. Well, you've brightened up many days of mine, I should say. I'd like to give a few shout-outs. First of all, to Iteraldo from Belo Horizonte, Brazil, who listens to the podcast every day on his hour-long walk to the Ecologic Park in his city. Cheers to you for getting so much exercise in your daily routine and learning English while you do it. You're killing two birds with one stone. I'd also like to say hello to Liliana Amado in Argentina, who's been so supportive while working through the course material. It's people like you who make content creators like me do what we do. Same goes to you, Paulo Torino, and everyone else who's written to me recently. On days like today, when I read your messages, I get really excited to share English with you. And I'm brought back to the time I spent in foreign countries listening to language podcasts. When I lived in Berlin, I would ride the U-Bahn, which is their form of transportation, their metro or subway, every day listening to Annick Rubens. In fact, I spent so much time with Annick on her show called Schlaflos in München that I saw her as a friend. And yeah, that's pretty cool. It brings me back also to Spain and how much time I spent with Ben and Marina, the podcast hosts from Notes in Spanish. Ben and Marina are a couple. Ben is a Brit and Marina is a Spaniard. So we call someone from Spain a Spaniard. And for one full year when teaching English in Spain, they accompanied me as I walked the windy streets in Calahorra. I still can't pronounce the city name. They had tortilla y café con leche with me in my favorite coffee shop. They traveled on the bus with me. They were my buddies. Now, not to get all sentimental or anything, but podcasts are pretty cool, don't you think? Being on the creation side nowadays, I have to say I love to hear from you. If you're listening to this podcast right now, stop what you're doing and write me a message on Instagram. You can find me at American English Podcast. I want to know who you are, where you live, and what exactly you are doing at this very moment. Are you doing dishes, cooking dinner, walking to the park, on your way to work? All right, don't stop if you're in your car, but yeah, shoot me a message when you can. Once again, my Instagram is at American English Podcast. Anyway, guys, the reason why I've been posting every other week is because things are happening. Good things. For one, I've been moving the website's courses to Teachable, which is much less buggy than the platform I was using previously. It also gives anyone who buys my courses the ability to interact easier, which is great. I love the format. So you can check all of those updated courses on the website. If you've paid for my course material previously and cannot find the emails I sent out to give you access to the new contents location, by all means, please send me an email at theamericanenglishpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll be sure to fix that for you right away. So today I'm going to tell you a story. I honestly can't remember if I've told this story before, but it's a story about a language company I created with friends in the past. And I mentioned to flop. The language company flopped. To flop in this context means to fail. We can also use the phrasal verb to go under to express the same thing. After 2 years in business, my company went under. It flopped. It didn't work out. To be frank, it took a long time to appreciate the valuable lessons taught by that company not succeeding. But nowadays, I see the failure as not really failure, but really a stepping stone for progress. It's kind of like in language learning, right? If you make mistakes, it's actually a sign that you're trying. So if you aren't making mistakes, you probably aren't trying hard enough. They are inevitable and are a result of effort. Yeah, so let's talk. From 2012 to 2014, I lived in New York City. I mentioned back in episode number 7 that I worked for a nonprofit that worked directly with the United States State Department and big tech companies to help foreigners come into the United States for internships, specifically on J-1 visas. Sounds like a cool gig, right? I got to test English levels for interns going to Google and Amazon, some fashion companies like Marc Jacobs. Every day, I got the chance to talk via Skype to a number of non-native English speakers around the world. And that was the part I loved most. But for the rest of the time, I was pretty much pushing paper. To push paper means to do bureaucratic work, to do office work, such as filing papers, faxing documents, sending mail, reading applications. Pushing paper is not a fun office responsibility, in my opinion. But the pushing paper back then shed light on something I was unaware of. On their applications, I could see exactly what that intern was going to do while working in the US and how much they would earn. And most of them were getting around $6,500 a month. And this is for tech companies. I'm not talking about fashion here. A lot of times the fashion interns would earn much less. So tech companies around $6,500. Now, I have to mention, San Francisco is the most expensive city in the US, at least the last time I checked. And the cost of living in Silicon Valley, which is nearby and packed with startup companies and now established businesses, is outrageous. But still, numbers like this, so this income, makes you think. After all, these were 20-year-olds. They hadn't even graduated from college yet, and that was their first work experience. Now, it's not healthy to compare yourself to others, but back then I couldn't help it, right? I'd studied global studies with a focus on international relations, thinking that I'd be able to work with people from other countries and be able to have an impact on the world, a positive one. I started to feel like these young techies were making a bigger impact. They weren't just pushing paper in the way that I was. And they were earning way more, which would, of course, enable them to do more fun things in their free time, such as travel the world. I kept thinking, I'm happy to work for free if I'm helping someone, but I don't really feel like I'm helping and I'm not making money, so what am I doing? I'd rather travel the world and teach to support myself. That was back in 2013. My boyfriend at the time was a web developer, and like me, he loved learning languages. We actually met at a meetup that occurred every Sunday in New York City called Language Exchange NYC. That event still exists today, of course, not with COVID being active, but it took place at the top of a high rise at 230 Fifth Avenue, which had a rooftop bar and a view of the Empire State Building and the city. There we would have cocktails and pop from one table to another table, meeting people from around the world and sharing our travel experiences. It was cool because you could also bond while practicing French, Spanish, German, sometimes other languages too. I liked the event so much that I ended up running it for almost the entire time we lived in New York. At that event, we came across a problem. A lot of people were coming that wanted to practice a specific language, but then there was no one there for them to practice with, which was strange because a lot of times there were over 100 guests at one meeting. We thought, well, what if an app or website existed that could allow you to find people that speak different languages around you, you know, using GPS? If such a site existed, language learners would never miss out on an opportunity to practice. So the challenge to find native speakers in the vicinity was so real to me, and I took it to heart. I remember around that time, I went to Paris and I sat in a coffee shop. And while I was sitting there, I thought, okay, I am surrounded by French people. I've been practicing French with my French teacher, and I've been listening to French podcasts for months. I am so ready to talk to someone. Now I just wish someone would come up and talk to me. But then I realized nobody knows I want to practice French with them. It's in a foreign country. You need to have the courage to speak to random people, which is incredibly hard, especially when you're not confident with your language level. If you're like me, there's probably a lot going through your head. Like, does this stranger even want to talk to me if I approach them? Do they have the time to talk to me? I mean, I consider myself an outgoing person, and this was like a really harsh reality to deal with. The part that really bugged me was that I thought, what if someone is in this exact same room as me right now that is learning English, wants to practice, and doesn't know that I am there wanting to talk to them? The inability to track language skills around you is the reason why we started Chatterplot, which was our language company. In our minds, the world of language learners could be more connected. The sites that existed to connect other language learners, like Facebook, Meetup, Couchsurfing events, were not instant enough and were focused on the group rather than the individual. The problem is, in order to start a startup, you need money. Many startups in the United States start in incubators, which are locations where small businesses can work and have access to professionals that will help them get off the ground. In other words, to help them succeed. But we decided to bootstrap. Bootstrap is another funky term used in the startup world, and it's used to describe a company that's being built with the owner's own money. And usually that money is not a lot. We can also say, I'm strapped for cash. It means you don't have very much. So we bootstrapped our startup. So how do we do this? Well, first, we decided to cut our expenses. We would still go out to eat occasionally, but we'd often get one drink and split it. We'd often go to coffee shops to work and drink one cup of coffee for like 3 or 4 hours. I'm sure the owners hated us. We even became freegans, which I'll be sure to talk about in a later episode, because I know if you look this up right now, you're going to judge me. On weekends, we'd sign up for hackathons. A hackathon is an event where people can come together to work on some sort of project that usually involves computer programming. In New York City, a lot of co-working spaces host these sorts of events on weekends and provide a ton of food and drink for anyone that wants to take part. You don't necessarily need to be a programmer. So we'd hang out all day and meet new people. At night, after work, we'd go to startup networking events, which were heavily concentrated in the Flatiron District of New York City, if you're familiar with that. And we could pitch our ideas to strangers every single night of the week if we wanted, which was great. We did sometimes. But what surprised us was the response of the people we talked to. People were not very receptive to our idea. They'd ask questions like, so eventually your site will track individuals? Do you think that people really want to have an app that tracks them? You would have to deal with potential stalkers. How is a site like that going to earn money? Nowadays, I see these as totally valid questions, but back then, I was young, naive, and at times like dangerously overconfident. I think, you know, they're not language learners, they don't understand, they haven't lived in a foreign country before or tried to practice a foreign language there, so they don't know what it's like to be an outsider. But yeah, I probably should have listened. Anyway, so we kept pushing. Now, normally I'd say that it's impossible to start a business in New York City if you don't have money because the cost of living is absurd. But New York and other big cities in the US, especially cities that are known for having startups and technology, have regular competitions to earn money. In June of 2014, we entered a business plan competition, New York Startup. And this actually still exists today. If anyone plans on starting a business and needs extra help, this business plan competition gives eager first-time business owners a business expert to work with for free, and also library assistants to use the databases they have there, which are insane. Maybe I'll talk about it in a future episode. Anyway, the winner of the best business plan would get $10,000. To make a long story short, we didn't get that. I remember my business expert even telling me, girl, don't quit your day job, which is an expression we use in English to tell someone, hey, don't do anything risky that could jeopardize your steady income. So for example, if a friend of yours is a horrible singer, you might tell them, yeah, go make a record, but don't quit your day job. So don't jeopardize your steady income. Don't quit what's earning you money. So being naive, as I said, we did quit our day jobs. And so did our friend Chris, who would become our designer. So together, we managed to gather about $15,000 to spend on our business. And we called it Chatterplot. Chatter means a lot of talk. So if you enter a coffee shop, you might hear chatter. Some words and phrases and conversation might be indistinguishable because there's a lot of noise at once. And plot, well, plot has a few meanings. Maybe you want to build a house and you buy a plot of land to build your house on. It's that piece of land, a defined space. To plot as a verb also has many meanings, but here we meant it as to plan out a sequence of events. I plotted our daily tasks on a timeline, for example. So chatter plot, a plot or a plan to start talking. Back then, a shared apartment in New York City was around $1,000 a month per person, which was an expense that was not in our budget. We didn't have investment either, as I mentioned. Nobody had invested in our company. Invest in, always use the preposition in with invest. And we couldn't afford spending $1,000 a month plus other living expenses. So we started to look for more affordable places to live. We had heard about the lives of digital nomads, and it sounded so enticing. A digital nomad is a person who earns money online over the internet and travels around the world while earning money. So we read articles of digital nomads living in Morocco, who surfed in the morning and worked at night, others in Thailand, who spent the week in Chiang Mai, and on weekends on the picturesque blue ocean. Some even lived in beach huts, like little tiki huts. Although I'm still not quite sure how they were able to have good internet connections there. After hours spent on Nomadlist and other sites trying to figure out where to go, we ended up deciding on Berlin. Berlin, I'd lived in before. It was international. There was a startup scene, a huge polyglot community, and it was affordable with good internet connections. Plus, the visa situation was easy. It was a cinch. It was a piece of cake. Our developer had a Lithuanian passport, so he could stay there. The designer, Chris, could stay for 6 months as an artist, as long as he had an exhibition. And I stayed as a master's student. I applied to the University of Potsdam to get a master's in Germanistik, which is basically like German studies. And I'd go to a few classes a week and divide all of my free time between language practice, startup events, and teaching. So what's it like to start a company in the US, right? So we were overseas, but being overseas, you can still start a company in the US as an American. I'm not sure if you're foreign. That's something that you can find answers to, though. I'll get to that in a second. Before moving to Europe, we decided to establish our company in the US, which sounds like an incredibly complicated process, but it's not at all. I had read Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, and he recommended opening a company in the US through a third party called LegalZoom. All their role is simplifying the process. I was honestly shocked just by how simple it is to open a company. It doesn't matter if it's a sole proprietorship, an LLC, an S corp, a C corp. We had an LLC, which stands for Limited Liability Company. And we set it up in a day and were established within a week, if I remember correctly. I highly recommend LegalZoom if you ever want to open a business here. You can call them. Their customer service is great. I definitely think it's important, especially if you want to know how to avoid paying some state tax legally. Anyway, over and over again, we felt like our business was being validated. We wanted to practice German while in Germany, but we couldn't figure out how. I remember thinking while sitting in my apartment, maybe one of my neighbors wants to practice English with me right now and I could practice German, but I don't know if that person exists. We set up meetup groups there and soon realized that many refugees who were coming into Berlin at the time were relying on friendly volunteers and meetups like ours to meet natives. Then we met the Esperanto speakers, who flipped out with the idea. For those of you who aren't familiar with Esperanto, it's a language that was created by a man named L.L. Zamenhof to be a universal second language. And it's absurdly simple to learn. Honestly, you could learn it in a month if you wanted to. The point is, Esperanto is not a native language to a specific country. Speakers of the language are scattered around the world, and so they want to, of course, find each other. When we decided to focus on Esperanto, there was a huge amount of enthusiasm within the community. It didn't take long to realize, though, that things were not working out according to plan. We couldn't develop fast enough. We couldn't market fast enough. Our business model kept changing for various reasons. And after about a year, we only had about 1,000 users using our site. We were running out of money and decided that we were going to move yet again, just because we didn't want to spend the winter in Berlin. So we tried out that whole digital nomad idea one last time and ended up in a city called Barranquilla, Colombia, the city where Shakira is from. And we ended up staying in a house that had no air conditioning. It was very humid. There wasn't a good internet connection. I also ended up getting Zika at that point in time. 2015 in December was not a good time to be in Northern Colombia. Although the country is so, so beautiful. So it was worth it for other reasons. Anyway, after a few rough months, we decided to part ways. In English, we say that hindsight is 20/20. When someone has 20/20 vision, it means that they can see everything perfectly. Hindsight is your understanding of a situation. Of course, you will understand your mistakes better or the reason why they occurred if you're in the present. Hindsight is 20/20. I'm going to go ahead and read some of the things that I think we could have done differently. These are going to be using the third conditional, right? So in retrospect, we should have started mobile first, since the ideal version of our company required GPS. In retrospect, we shouldn't have hired a cheap developer thinking we'd save money. It took twice as long to deal with that individual and cost us twice as much to complete tasks. We shouldn't have bought t-shirts and bags as giveaways before having a functioning website. In retrospect, it would have made more sense to have a viable product before trying to become a digital nomad, because the logistics of moving overseas, dealing with visas and all that stuff takes time and energy that you're not working on your actual company when you aren't earning money. We also probably shouldn't have opened up a company so early. We didn't even have a product yet. We didn't even know it would be successful. So why go through that hassle? I think the most important takeaway of this entire thing was really figuring out how to work well with others, and also getting to know a lot of the language companies that exist. This is something that I think could be valuable for a lot of you. So let's talk about how you can talk to native speakers. Since about 2015, a lot of different language companies have appeared that have really enabled people to start talking with one another in an environment that facilitates conversation, that facilitates people talking. HelloTalk, for example, has a feature to find speakers of a specific language nearby, which is pretty much what we were trying to do back then. The site also has free features to send text, audio, or video to people who are learning your language, so that you can learn their language. Show Around, for example, is wonderful if you're visiting a different city and want to meet locals who can show you around, show you what it's like to be from their city or from their country. Bumble also is great if you want to find friends in a specific place. I know for a fact that a lot of native English speakers use that. As for Esperanto, my friend Chuck took the Chatterplot idea to create a website called Amikumu to find Esperanto speakers, which as far as I can tell is doing really well. If you're online, of course, there are plenty of different options to find native speakers. Tons of different language partner sites. The quickest and easiest way for me to find language partners has been over iTalki, which is where I used to teach English regularly. And there's the community there. I mean, you post an article, you can follow people, send them a message. Recently, though, Clubhouse came out, and I know a lot of you have probably heard of it already by now. It's gone viral, and it's made it really, really easy to talk to native speakers. I've actually been using it on a daily basis for the past week to practice Portuguese. And I have to say, people are so supportive in the groups. They know where you're coming from because there are a lot of people also learning different languages or learning your language. And so there's this sort of understanding, a deeper understanding of where we're coming from, and no judgment as well, which I love. It's a great way to get to know somebody quickly. And then, you know, you have the potential to take it offline once you have made that connection. So if I could give one little piece of advice to anyone that is looking for a language partner or some way to practice English immediately, it's first of all to go on these platforms and just start talking. The one thing that I realized inhibits me is thinking too much before I start to talk. If I am in a place, whether that's a coffee shop, and there's people to practice with in person, if I'm in a chat room, like on Clubhouse, for example, and I think for too long about what I'm going to say or about how awkward I'm going to sound, I'm not going to end up speaking up. And that is a huge problem that I know that a lot of people have. So the biggest tip there is make your decision to talk within the first 5 seconds of joining a group or the first 5 seconds that you are in an environment. By doing that, you will not let your brain take control of the situation and you automatically will feel more at ease because of that. Anyway, that is my little piece of advice. As for my company, it no longer exists, but I have to say there is always, always something that you can learn from making mistakes. So if you go into those chat rooms, make mistakes and celebrate them. Anyone and everyone ever learning a foreign language has gone through the same thing. All right, that's it for today. Hope you enjoyed. And until next time, bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of the American English Podcast. Remember, it's my goal here to not only help you improve your listening comprehension, but to show you how to speak like someone from the States. If you want to receive the full transcript for this episode, or you just want to support this podcast, make sure to sign up to premium content on AmericanEnglishPodcast.com. Thanks and hope to see you soon.